to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you shows from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Coming up in this hour, romance. Later on, we hear the theater of romance with Ray Milland. Right now, it's the Screen Guild Players with an adaptation of Edith Wharton's Pulitzer Prize-winning story, The Age of Innocence. This, starring John Payne, Jane Morgan, and actress Merle Oberon, was first heard on CBS on December 18, 1944.
Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild Players. The Lady Esther Screen Guild play tonight, The Age of Innocence. The starring players...
This is Merle Oberon.
This is John Payne.
Tonight, Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild Players in the RKO picture, The Age of Innocence, a poignant story of old New York based on the famous novel by Edith Wharton. It stars Merle Oberon as Ellen Mingott and John Payne as Newland Archer. The Lady Esther Screen Guild Players in The Age of Innocence.
Nancy, I've only got 2 days leave. Why waste good time in an old picture album?
Well, when you marry me, you marry my family. You want to know something about them, don't you?
Well, I know you. That's enough for me.
Oh, silly. This was my grandfather, Grandpa Newland.
Sideburns, huh? What was he made up for?
Johnny, don't be disrespectful. And this one was my grandmother, May. She was very young then.
Not bad, not bad. Say, who's that other gal?
Oh, that was Grandma's cousin, Ellen. She was a countess.
Sure looks like she had plenty of zing.
I've always thought she was very beautiful. You know, ever since I was a kid, I've wondered about her and asked about her, but the family never says very much, and... Well, sometimes I just wish she could talk.
And if I could talk, what would I say? How could I make you understand? New York was different then. It was so formal and so prim. The social customs rigid as milady's stays. And still I felt I must go back. I must go home. Although I knew there would be talk. Oh, yes. I knew how busy tongues would wag.
My dear, have you heard? Ellen Mingott is back.
But she lived in Europe for years and years. What in the world would bring her home now?
They say she's left her husband, Count Olenska. There's been talk of a scandal.
Oh, how simply disgraceful. Of course, she won't be accepted in decent society.
Oh, you underestimate her grandmother Mingott.
You mean that Mrs. Mingott would even dare?
Oh, yes, indeed. Tonight, in fact, she's bringing her to May Welland's engagement reception.
Granny, do you think I should have come? Doesn't New York society consider me suspect?
Let society think what it wishes, Ellen. I made the rules here for 20 years.
Granny!
Oh, there's your cousin May now.
Granny, here's Newland. I captured him for you.
Hello there, Granny Mingott.
Oh, what sort of a greeting is that, young man? Don't I get a kiss?
You most certainly do.
Oh, makes me feel young again.
Cousin May, I think we're lucky to get him in the family.
I think so, too. Newland, you remember my cousin Ellen?
Ellen Mingott? Of course.
That was all. Just those few words. And then you smiled at me, Newland, and took my hand. And somehow in that very first moment, I think I knew why I'd come home. But it wasn't until later that evening we had a chance to talk alone. And really, I never meant to say what I did. It started as a simple conversation, quite proper,
quite
polite.
Did you have a pleasant trip over, Countess?
Very, thank you.
I suppose you see lots of changes in New York.
Yes, and in the people, too.
The people? How?
Oh, everyone is so kind to me now, and I left here broken-hearted, my whole life over.
But you were only a child.
I was 8, and I'd suffered a very cruel disappointment. I'd been publicly snubbed by my secret hero.
Why, not really.
Oh, yes. It happened at Cousin May's birthday party. He wouldn't dance with me. I was too little.
Why, the nasty little wretch.
Yes, weren't you?
You should have just... me? Are you trying to say that was...
Really, you know, you were such a horrid little boy.
But I don't understand. I mean...
Don't worry. I forgave you years ago.
Are you sure?
If you wish, I'll prove it. I'll give you that poor last dance right now.
Now?
You won't refuse me this time, will you?
Why, of course not. And I'll never believe that I ever did.
Newland, my dearest, if you'd only guessed what it meant to me, after all those weary years, to be home, to see you again, to hear your voice. But you belonged to May. You loved each other. I told myself I had no right. I must fill my life with something else. And so I tried. Not always wisely, perhaps, but I tried. And Granny was a little worried, I think.
Is that you, Ellen? Come in. I'm just having my tea.
Oh, Granny, how wonderful. How would you guess I'd be chilled to the bone?
Well, if you must go driving in cold weather like this, 2 lumps of sugar.
Thanks. And I wasn't driving. I was walking.
With whom, my dear?
With Mr. Beaufort.
A married man.
I thought his wife would be along, but it seems she doesn't like the cold. This tea is good.
Ellen, you know what the Beaufort reputation is. No nice woman would be seen walking up Fifth Avenue with him in broad daylight.
Darling, would you rather I'd walk with him at night?
Would I rather you? Oh, that's very good. As good an answer as I've ever had.
As a matter of fact, we were out on business. Mr. Beaufort helped me find a charming house.
A house? Ellen, child, you're not leaving me.
Darling, you've been very sweet, wanting me to stay with you. But it's time I set up for myself again.
But in a house? Alone?
I'll have my maid with me. Really, Granny, it'll be better that way. I won't have to see so much of... well, of the family. And they'll feel less embarrassed, too. I mean, when the action starts.
Action? What on earth are you talking about?
I stopped in to see Mr. Blair today. I've asked him to get me a divorce.
A divorce?
And there's no use arguing. My mind's made up, Granny. There's absolutely nothing you can say.
Indeed there is, and I'll say it right now. I'll have another cup of tea.
I'm a little early, I believe. I have an appointment with Mr. Blair.
Yes, madame. This way, please. The Countess Olenska, sir.
Come in, Ellen.
Why, Newland. This is such a surprise.
Why, you knew I was with Mr. Blair's firm.
Yes, I did, in a way, but...
Well, he had to leave for Washington quite suddenly, so he asked me to take over your case. Won't you sit down?
Thank you. And how is May? She promised to come to see my little house.
Well, she's been so busy. You know they're leaving for Florida this week.
Yes, of course. Newland, I'm so glad you're going to handle my case. Mr. Blair's so old, it's hard to make him understand. He feels with the family that I'm making a mistake.
Ellen, are you sure you aren't?
But if, Newland...
If your husband chooses to fight the case, he'll say things... well, things that'll be unpleasant, that will be painful and disagreeable to
yes,
you.
Yes, I know, but I thought
your
you...
Your family, the people who are fondest of you, feel that no advantage you might gain could possibly be worth the damage to your reputation.
I see.
You mustn't think I'm blaming you for anything that might have happened. You were lonely and unhappy.
No, not always lonely. Newland, I'm not mincing words. You mustn't expect me to. I want my freedom. I'm not going to pretend.
Pretend?
I'm a woman who must have love, who must be loved. Do you think I'm horrible to say that?
No. I think you're being very honest.
Then don't you see... Don't you think maybe it's not too late for me, even now? Maybe I can start all over, choose for myself, as you have. One from all the rest. Lover, companion, friend, everything. Like you and May.
But there are so many others to think of.
Yes. I thought you'd say that.
Think of Granny Mingott. She loves you, Ellen. She'd stand by you, but it would break her heart. And all the rest of the family. If I didn't show you how they feel, what it would do to them... It wouldn't be fair of me, would it?
No. No, it wouldn't be fair. Very well, I'll think it over.
Ellen, if you only knew... I do so want to help.
I know you do. Thank you, dear cousin.
And goodbye.
It's not right. It's not fair. It's not...
Beg pardon, sir. Is anything wrong?
Wrong? The whole confounded world is wrong.
What was it, Newland? Was it just pity? Sympathy? A feeling of sorrow because I was lost? Or was it something else? What made you send me roses one day without a card? What took you past my house one afternoon? What made you pause, turn halfway to the door, then hurry on again? And then, at last one evening, what was it really that brought you inside?
I've been meaning to come see your house. I rather like it, Ellen.
I like it, too. Though, of course, the neighborhood isn't very fashionable. Newland, why is it that all your fashionable houses have to be the same color?
I guess we're because we're afraid of being different. It's something I've thought a good deal about lately. I must confess, I've been thinking about you, too.
About me?
Yes, I've changed my mind. I think you're entitled to your freedom. I want to help you get it.
But what about all the things you said?
It's your life and your happiness. You've a right to decide these things for yourself.
The family.
Oh, hang the family. The family's wrong, and so is I.
I don't think so, Newland.
But, Ellen, you wanted so much.
I know. But I've been doing some thinking, too. It's better if I just forget about my divorce.
Better for whom?
Better for everyone.
You're bringing in the family again. And now I'm only concerned with you and your happiness.
Newland, do you really want me to be happy?
Of course I do.
Then you must run along and let me change. I'll be late for Granny's.
Well, I'm very sorry. I didn't mean...
You're such a dear. By the way, when are you planning to be married?
Not till next fall. May's family believes in long engagements.
How silly. You've known each other all your lives. Newland, will you do something for me?
Anything? What?
I do so want to see you happy. Write to May in Florida. Tell her you want to be married at once. Will you?
Yes. I'll write tomorrow.
Promise?
I promise.
Good night, then. And oh, I'm sorry. I never thanked you for the roses.
Rose? How did you know? I sent no card.
Newland, sometimes I wonder what you're going to be when you grow up. Good night. I tried so hard. And Newland, you tried too. You tried to deny what you had found in your heart. How carefully we managed not to meet or talk for fear that one of us might speak the truth. Long, lonely days, and even lonelier nights. Until the Van Luydens asked me up for the weekend. I didn't know you'd be there, but you were. They'd asked you too. And then at last we were alone. You were so grave and quiet, but your eyes were eager. I think I was a little frightened then. I tried to make small talk. I said, "This is such a lovely old room, isn't it? Newland?"
Huh? Oh, I'm sorry.
I was saying it's such a lovely old room.
The house has been here since 1610.
The fire, too? Has it been burning on the hearth all these hundreds of years?
No. I think it flamed into life when you came in, as everything else does. Ellen, dear.
No, please, we mustn't. They'll be getting back from church.
I don't care. I don't care about anything in the world but you, Ellen.
I can't fight anymore. I can't. Hold me close, Newland. Don't let me go.
Oh, my
ever.
Darling. Darling. But you're crying. Why?
Because I feel that all in one moment I'd been born and had died.
But this is the first moment we've ever lived. It's all so simple for us now.
For us. And for May?
May will understand. I'll tell her everything. She'll give me my freedom.
Newland, she's so young, so innocent. We can't steal from her.
How can you steal what she doesn't have? It's you I love, only you, Ellen. I'll go to her. I'll make her see it's my fault.
Newland, you young scamp, where are you?
It's Granny. They're back.
Well, this is where you've been hiding. We've a little surprise for you, young man. He's in here, May.
May?
Newland! Newton, darling!
May, you're home. I thought that...
We got in from Florida this morning. When I learned you were here... Oh, Newland, they've consented. Papa and Mom have consented, dearest. We're going to be married right away.
Newland!
The curtain falls on Act One of the Lady Esther Screen Guild Players. And now the spotlight is on you. How does your skin look in the glare of bright lights? If you really want to know, well, here's an interesting experiment Lady Esther asks you to make.
I'm going to ask you to do a strange thing. I'm going to ask you to shut your eyes tight. Right now, while you're listening to me, shut your eyes and run your fingers gently over your face. You see, in the dark, your sense of touch becomes much sharper. What do you feel as your fingers explore your skin? Do you feel a lovely smoothness, like the soft touch of satin? Or does your skin feel a little dry and flaky? Do you feel little bumps here and there? Now you can get rid of that dryness with Lady Esther Four-Purpose Face Cream. You can instantly make your skin look and feel smoother, younger, finer textured. And I make no claims I'm not prepared to prove. I ask you to make the Lady Esther Patch Test. I ask you to compare results with the results from any cream you've ever used, regardless of price. To make the test, just rub a little Lady Esther face cream on one patch of skin, like your forehead, chin, or cheek. Wipe it off, and then see and feel the difference. See how much fresher and clearer it looks than all the skin around it. Feel how the dry, rough flakes are gone. And remember, what happens to that one cheek will happen to your entire face when you use Lady Esther face cream. For one, it thoroughly cleans your skin. Two, it softens your skin. Three, it helps nature refine the pores. And four, it leaves a smooth, perfect base for powder. Remember, these are facts you can prove for yourself. The patch test takes only 30 seconds. And in 30 seconds, half a minute, you can see and feel the exciting difference Lady Esther face cream makes in your skin.
And now, Lady Esther presents the second act of The Age of Innocence, starring John Payne as Newland Archer and Merle Oberon as Ellen Mingott. Ellen continues our story.
May was so young, so terribly happy. We couldn't bear to break her heart. And so you were married, Newland, my dearest. And almost before I realized that you were gone, you and May, to Europe on your honeymoon. You were gone, but that didn't make it any easier for me. I was waiting, Newland, waiting for you. And then at last you were back, but I couldn't face you. Yes, I ran away that afternoon. I went to the park, hoping you'd be gone when I returned to the house. But they wouldn't have it that way. They sent you after me.
Ellen! Ellen!
Newland! Oh.
I'm all out of breath. I've been walking so fast. I was so afraid I wouldn't find you. I was almost ready to shout.
That's silly.
I've been looking forward so long to seeing you. I thought perhaps you'd gone, and even now I can't believe it. It might all be a dream, only...
Only
you're so much more than I remembered.
Newland, you mustn't.
I won't say anything you don't want me to. I promise I won't. If only you won't go away. If only I can see you sometimes, just to know you're near, to talk to you.
Newland, they'll be waiting for us at Granny's. I think we'd better go back.
Ellen, my dear.
Yes?
Why have you hidden yourself out here in the conservatory? Why have you run away from our party?
Newland, please go back inside. If anyone found us out here together...
Oh, don't worry. I won't even touch your hand. I wouldn't dare. If I did, I'd have to take you in my arms.
You promised. You said that if I came tonight...
I know I promised. I'd promise anything for the chance of seeing you. And then when I do, I forget my promises. I forget everything, but... Ellen, I've got to see you alone.
No.
Tomorrow afternoon.
No.
The Museum of Art. I'll be waiting for you.
Newland?
Yes?
How many times have we met here like this?
I've never counted them. Each time I feel it's the first. Ellen, you're not going to stop.
I'm afraid that Granny has an idea. Every afternoon now, she thinks of a thousand things she wants me to do.
I know. Blair, too. He's sending me to Washington again tonight.
Oh, for how long?
2 or 3 days, perhaps a week. Sometimes I think they're all banded together, watching, pretending not to, trying to keep me from seeing you.
Yes, I felt it, too.
Ellen, I can't go on like this, living on a few stolen moments. I've got to tell May. I'll throw myself on her generosity and...
And undo everything we've done to protect her? Besides, what would be the use? If the family dreaded my divorce, do you think for a moment they'd allow May?
And then to the devil with the family. We'll go away. Away from everything. To some place where people can be free.
And where is that place? Has anyone ever found it? Over there, we think it's here. And here, we think it's over there.
We'll find it, darling. We'll find it together.
Oh, my dearest, it's not fair. To know that life is slipping by, and after that, only death and dust and oblivion and... Newland, take me to Washington with you tonight.
But May, my dear child, are you positive?
Yes, Granny. They've been seen together, and Newland has seemed so strange, so far away. He's been kind, of course, but...
What are you going to do about it?
Well, Newland's going to Washington tonight. I thought I'd ask Ellen to stay with me. Perhaps if I could talk to her.
Yes. Ellen loves you very much.
And I love her. I really...
Granny, where are you, darling?
Oh, there she is. You can ask her now. In the sunroom, Ellen.
Dearest, I didn't mean to be so long. Oh, May.
Hello, Ellen. I came over to
darling,
ask you...
Darling, not now. I'm in such a rush. I'm going out of town tonight.
Out of town?
Oh, I'll be back soon. And we can have a nice long talk. You'll excuse me, won't you? I've simply got to pack.
Oh, Granny.
You're not giving up.
But if she's going away...
She hasn't gone yet. Why don't you go upstairs? Maybe you can help her pack.
Conductor, are you sure this is the only train for Washington?
Yes, sir. All aboard, please.
And that's the only gate?
That's all.
It's strange. She said she'd be here. If anything has happened to her...
We're starting, sir. You getting on?
I... No, conductor. I've changed my mind. Jenkins, is Countess Olenska here?
Why, no, sir. She's gone.
How long ago did she leave?
Oh, I should say they left about...
You mean someone was with her?
The family, sir. They're seeing her off. I understand it was quite sudden, sir.
Seeing her off sudden? Jenkins, what are you trying to say?
The Countess is sailing for Europe, sir.
And so, once more you came to me, Newland, after all the others had gone. There was only the barest moment left. You looked so wild and angry as you came striding down the deck.
Ellen! Ellen! Darling, what's the meaning of this?
Newland, I didn't expect to see you. I'm so glad you came to say goodbye.
Goodbye? But, darling, our plans are...
Newland, please. It has to be this way.
Who says it has to be this way? Who says it has to be?
Darling, please help me. Don't make it any harder.
Did you really think you could do this to us?
Oh, my dearest, please.
I don't blame you for not wanting to hide our love in the dark as though we're ashamed of it, but to run away like this...
Darling, there's the whistle. You have to go.
I warn you, I'll be coming over on the next boat. I'll follow you. If it's just to touch your hand, I'll follow you across the world.
Newland, listen to me, dear. I love you for saying that. I love you for all the things you are. I'd ask nothing more than that our dreams come true. But your place is here, with your wife and your child.
Child?
May told me about it this afternoon.
A child? I didn't know.
All visitors ashore, please. All visitors ashore.
This is goodbye, Newland. And yet, it's not goodbye. Wherever I go, whatever I do, you be with me, darling, in my heart, through all my life, through all that might come afterward. Newland, my dearest, I've always loved you. I always will. Always.
Say, Nancy. Hey, Nancy.
Oh, I'm sorry, Johnny. I was dreaming over this picture, I guess. Johnny, do you think she had a happy life?
Well, two will get you five. All you have to do is look at her. I'll bet she was the happiest of the whole darn lot.
Thank you, Merle Oberon and John Payne, for appearing with the Lady Esther Screen Guild players tonight. We are grateful indeed for your fine performances.
We're glad to be here, Mr. Bradley. We look forward to our appearances with the Lady Esther Screen Guild players because we know that the benefits from these programs go to support the Motion Picture Relief Fund Country House.
Next week, the Lady Esther Screen Guild players will present Walt Disney's Pinocchio. It will star Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks and Hanley Stafford as Daddy. Be sure to listen. Merle Oberon can soon be seen in the Columbia picture, A Song to Remember. John Payne can soon be seen in the 20th Century Fox production, The Dolly Sisters. Music on tonight's program was arranged and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. You save enough on the largest size jar of Lady Esther face cream to buy a box of Lady Esther face powder. So remember, ask for the largest size. This is Truman Bradley speaking for Lady Esther, saying thank you and good night, everyone. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Screen Guild players, including Merle Oberon, John Payne, and Jane Morgan, and Edith Wharton's famous story, The Age of Innocence, which won a Pulitzer Prize for Literature in 1921, heard on CBS in December of 1944. This is Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you an hour of romance. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and now we're program the theater of romance that has a mix of a love story and a house haunted, called The Uninvited. With Ray Milland reprising his role from the 1944 motion picture, this story, first penned by Dorothy McArdle, was heard on February 19, 1946 on CBS.
Colgate tooth powder for a breath that's sweet.
And Halo shampoo to glorify your hair.
Present Ray Milland in your theater of romance from Hollywood. Tonight, Colgate Tooth Powder and Halo Shampoo bring you Paramount star of Lost Weekend in The Uninvited, Dorothy McArdle's intriguing story of ghosts and romance. And so to you, from Colgate Tooth Powder and Halo Shampoo, comes our play, The Uninvited, and our star, Ray Milland.
The house stood proud and beautiful on the edge of a Devon cliff looking out to sea. And my sister Pamela and I knew the moment we saw it that there was the home for us, if we could afford it. Oh, we heard the stories they told about it in the village, but there are ghost stories about every old house, particularly along those sea coasts where the fog comes in like a wraith at nightfall, and winds and waves whisper and sigh through long midnights. Ghosts? We weren't going to be taken in by old wives' tales. That's what we thought.
The house at Cliff End belongs to my granddaughter, Mr. Fitzgerald. You can buy it for £1,000.
£1,000? You'd sell that house for £1,000?
Yes. It's been difficult to find a purchaser because of the unpleasant stories that have circulated about it. If they don't worry you, I'll have the papers drawn up at once.
Commander, you've made a sale. And so it was ours. Ours, the stately entrance, the gracious living room, the intimate, warm little room next to it that had once been the nursery, the mellowed old library, the sweeping staircase that led up to bedrooms that looked out to sea. My sister and I had a glorious month, scrubbing and painting and furnishing. We were much too tired at night to shy at noises or even think of ghosts. As a matter of fact, I found most of my thoughts haunted by a very real, very much alive young person, the commander's granddaughter, Stella. It's hard to put Stella into words. It's almost impossible to group words together and say that Stella's eyes are like this, and this is Stella's smile and Stella's hair. I can only say that she was young and that she was lovely. And that she was like the music you feel inside when you're very happy or very sad.
You're very quiet, Roddy. What are you thinking about?
You? How long have we known each other, Stella?
About a month. Why?
Oh, no particular reason. I was just thinking that it seems as though I've known you all my life.
I know. I feel that way, too.
Stella, there's something I've been wanting to ask you. Why does your grandfather dislike me?
Oh, he doesn't. I'm sure he doesn't.
Well, he won't let you come to our house. And every time I meet you, I have the feeling that you're frightened to death that he'll see you with me.
It's not you. It's the house. I'm afraid it holds very bitter memories for him. He says when he carried me out of the nursery 17 years ago, he vowed that neither he or I would ever cross the threshold again.
But that doesn't seem fair.
He says it's morbid of me to want to go there. Roddy, do you believe that people come back after...
No, I don't think so. And yet, there are so many stories, you can't really know. I do believe this, that if spirits do walk, it's in the places they've loved. Why do you ask?
You see, I believe the same thing you do. Roddy, my mother was very happy at Cliff End. That's why I must visit it. With Grandfather's permission, or without it.
I fell asleep with Stella's words ringing in my ears. I awoke hours later. I thought it was a sound that had aroused me, but a heavy silence shrouded the house. I got up and listened a moment beside Pamela's door, and then outside our housekeeper's door. But there was no sound anywhere. And then I began to hear something. I didn't turn on the light. I leaned over the banister looking down. And gradually, I became aware of a light that shone very faintly through the half-open door of the nursery. A pale, pulsating gleam. It wasn't moonlight, it moved. And then, abruptly, light and sound were gone. And an overwhelming sense of terror told me that someone out of the world of the dead was moving about the house. A cold chill stabbed through me. And I saw. I saw the half-materialized figure of a woman moving towards me up the stairs. Somehow I managed to turn, managed to grope my way back to my room. I huddled under the blankets, clammy with fear, staring at my door, expecting anything. But nothing happened. And gradually the feeling passed, and a deep peace descended upon the house. and I fell asleep smelling the strong scent of mimosa and wondering where it came from.
Father Anson, you've had the village parish a good many years. I wonder if you could tell me, without divulging any confidences, of course, what you know about the Meredith house at Cliff End.
What exactly would you like to know?
How did Stella's mother die?
She fell from the cliff by the house. The nurse that was helping the Meredith said the girl, Carmel, was running for the cliff and that Mary was running after her, trying to stop her.
Who was Carmel?
A Spanish girl that Mr. Meredith was using for a model. He was quite an artist, you know. Anyhow, the story goes that the strong gale forced Carmel back against the tree that grows on the edge of the cliff. You know the one.
Yes, there's only one tree on the edge.
But Mary couldn't stop herself. It's quite steep there. She tried to grasp at the tree, but she went over. They found her at the bottom of the cliff. Her back was broken.
And the other girl, Carmel?
She died a week later from pneumonia. It was a terrible tragedy. Stella's father packed up and went off, and about 3 years later, the news came back that he had drowned at sea.
Good heavens.
You see, Carmel was Meredith's model at the time he and Mary were married. Mary insisted on bringing the girl back here with them. She always loved to do a generous thing.
Had he been in love with Carmel?
Meredith was hardly the sort to confide in a priest. Well, they were here about 6 months. Then in the winter, all three of them went abroad. In the spring, Meredith and Mary returned with their baby, who had been born in France.
And what happened to Carmel?
Mary found a position for her in Paris. She remained there about 2 years, and then she came back, ill and in rags, and Mary took her in. I'm afraid that's all I can tell you. You already know the ending.
No, I don't know the ending. Not yet. There are still some questions to be answered.
What kind of questions?
Why Mary Meredith cries at night in the nursery? Why she carries a lighted candle there?
You must not ask me to believe that the spirit of Mary Meredith is not at rest.
Well, I do ask you to believe it.
Mary never cried. She prided herself on it. And she never permitted any sort of light in Stella's nursery. Stella was afraid of the dark, but her mother felt she should overcome it.
Father Anson, there's just one more question I'd like to ask you. Stella told me her father wrote her once that her mother loved mimosa and used the scent constantly.
Mary? Mimosa? I've heard Mary say a dozen times that she never used scent in her life.
That's strange. I caught the fragrance quite strongly last night. No one in the house used it.
I didn't say that. As a matter of fact, Carmel used it almost constantly.
I was suddenly afraid for Stella. Afraid that a woman already dead who had hated her mother might find a way to destroy her too. But I couldn't explain this. And I couldn't close the door to her one night when she came to the house. And later, sitting in the firelight with Pamela and Stella, my fears gradually began to seem very foolish, and I half decided that I'd been the victim of my own imagination.
Roddy, I really must go. It's almost 11.
All right, I'll get the car out.
I'll go with you and hold the flashlight while you back the car out. Excuse us, Stella.
Of course.
We were almost to the garage when we heard Stella scream. We ran back to the house through a thick, cottony silence. The coldness of the nursery hit us like a physical blow. Stella was lying on the floor, her breathing so faint that for a moment I thought she wasn't breathing at all. I rubbed her hands frantically. For long, agonizing moments, there was no sign of recovery. And then gradually her breathing deepened, and her lips began to have color in them again. She opened her eyes, and I felt as though my own spirit had fled to the edge of death and come home again.
What is it? What's wrong?
Nothing, darling. You fainted, that's all. Lie still now.
I was so frightened, and I didn't want to be frightened. I wanted to tell her how much I loved her. But I was frightened.
Frightened of what, Stella?
Of my mother. I saw her in the doorway. Her eyes were blue and blazing. And she raised her arm as though she were going to strike me.
Strike you?
She looked at me as though she hated me. Oh, but that couldn't be true. She couldn't hate me. Not my mother.
That wasn't your mother, Stella. It was Carmel. It wasn't your mother.
Oh, but it was, Ronnie. I have a great many pictures of my mother, you know. I recognized her almost immediately.
Roddy, we've got to get her out of here. It's so cold.
Yes. Come on, Stella. We'll take you home, and you must never come here again.
I've got to come back, Roddy. Next time, I won't fail her.
There isn't going to be a next time. Is that clear, Stella? Is that clear, Stella? You're never coming here again. And if ever I learn the secrets of this house, I'll come to you and I'll tell you. Perhaps we'll learn. You can't fight the uninvited.
And now, Colgate Tooth Powder and Halo Shampoo bring you the second act of The Uninvited, starring Ray Milland.
Neither Pamela or I saw Stella for weeks. We learned from the village doctor that she'd been ill. Once I called the commander, but he would give no word of her. And in our strange house, a sense of brooding and unrest grew. One night when I was asleep, I heard Pamela hysterical and screaming.
Roddy! Roddy, where are you? Roddy!
I ran down the stairs. I found Pamela in the nursery, gray-faced and shaking.
There was a sort of cloud, Roddy. I saw it come in the door. It sort of floated in without taking shape. I don't know exactly how to describe it, but the room was full of a lovely sort of tranquility. It was warm and full of the scent of mimosa. I saw the soft glimmer of light, and I heard a woman whispering. Then the light went out and a low moaning began. It didn't frighten me at all, and I was trying to make up my mind to say something, but suddenly everything changed. There was that terrible cold, and I saw the shape coming in the door. I had a terrible feeling if you didn't come fast, I was going to run right over the cliff myself.
Pamela, shall we give up the house?
Do you want to?
It's up to you.
Oh, I don't want to give it up. I want to find out what's wrong here. Roddy, I think there are two ghosts.
Two ghosts? You may be right. Mary, who sighs and weeps, suffers a nightmare of misery in the nursery and comforts her daughter and gives her a light. And there's the other.
Yes, there's the other.
Terrifying, unmerciful, cold. Yes, one who wants to protect and one who wants to kill. I felt that both Pamela and I needed a bit of a recreation. So the next day we drove to Bristol to have dinner and see a play. But soon, a desperate uneasiness began to torment me. Pamela, I've got a terrible feeling that Stella's in some sort of danger. We must go. I seldom drive recklessly, but that night I drove like a madman. It seemed years, eternities, but at last there was the house, square set and steadfast. There was the tree lashing in the wind on the cliff's edge. The bay window of the nursery lit up in a blue blaze of light. Then its windows burst open and someone ran out, ran frantically, straight for the edge. Stella! Stella! If it hadn't been for the tree, I could never have saved her. She caught it and clung to it and swung like a child at play over the brink. I flung myself against the trunk, got a good grip on a bough, and was able to reach her and bring her to safety.
Sorry, Roddy. So sorry. You might have been killed.
Just relax, darling. I'm all right, and so are you.
There's something I've got to tell you. Roddy, you were right. It was not my mother in the nursery.
Why do you say that, Stella?
That night, when I was here before the cold came, there was such a lovely warmth, and I could smell mimosa. And hear someone saying lovely little words. I told my grandfather about it. I hoped he might be glad. But he was angrier than I'd ever seen him. He told me I imagined the whole thing because it seems my mother was not that sort of person. He said she was not sentimental about me. She was never a baby worshiper.
I sat there a moment looking at Stella. And then suddenly I knew. Suddenly the whole thing fell into a pattern. I only had to go to the phone to get Father Anson and to ask one question. Father Anson, did Carmel ever have a child? And then I could answer Stella. Darling, your mother did love you. She adored you. She sang to you and she stole into your room at night with a light. No baby was ever more loved. You see, everyone has made an extraordinary mistake. You're not Mary Meredith's child. I watched Stella anxiously, wondering how she would react to this. And then she smiled and my heart lifted.
Do you know, I've wondered so many times why I'm so unlike her. Oh, I've almost loved and hated her at the same time. Oh, Roddy, I feel as though suddenly I were free.
And you are, darling. You're free of Mary.
Roddy!
The sudden cold made me gasp. We were standing in the hall. I pushed Pamela and Stella into the library and switched off the light, plunging the room into blackness. I wanted to see Mary. I forced my way against an invisible pressure to the foot of the stairs and looked at her. She stood, taller than I'd seen her before, expanding and gathering form. She began to float down towards me. I stood on the second step, gripping the rail to keep myself from falling. And then suddenly I laughed. I laughed because it was so incongruous. The awe and terror which had surrounded the ghost of Carmel and the harmless innocence of her spirit. Mary was laughable. What had she ever known of the joy and the reckless valor of love? Mary only knew how to hate and how to punish. She had wanted to be remembered as a saint betrayed by sinners, had she? Do you hear that, Mary? I'm laughing at you. You're shown up. Your memory and your poses are done with, you shallow fraud. She loomed above me, wavering. And step by step, I mounted up against her. You tried to kill Carmel the night you chased her to the cliff, and you were fooled, weren't you? You thought Meredith still loved her, and you were in a frenzy of rage and jealousy. Well, there's nothing left of you now, Mary. Nothing but a story to laugh over. A tale for maids to giggle at in the kitchen. The illusion is shattered. The legend is in tatters. No one's afraid of you anymore. You might as well go, Mary. You might as well go.
Roddy, how did you ever get the nerve? How could you do it?
Oh, I come from a line of very brave fellows. My ancestors fought dragons to win their ladies. So I guess the least I could do was to take on a ghost or two. Stella, you could never say no after my going through all that. Could you, darling?
I'm afraid I could never have said no. Anyhow, Roddy.
Oh, darling, darling, this is going to be a wonderful house now. It's and a wonderful world. Oh.
What's the matter, Roddy?
I just had the most horrible thought. Mary Meredith might have been my mother-in-law.
Ray Milland, star of Gene Holloway's adaptation of The Uninvited, tonight's presentation of the Colgate Tooth Powder and Halo Shampoo Theater Romance, will return to our microphone in just a moment. For his appearance in tonight's Theater of Romance, Colgate Tooth Powder and Halo Shampoo express their thanks to Ray Milland, who will soon be seen in the Paramount picture, Kitty. Ray, The Uninvited certainly didn't apply to you. It was great to have you here.
Well, thank you, Frank, and I was glad to be here. Incidentally, regular listeners to Theater of Romance will hear an awfully good show next Tuesday night. Your double sponsors, Colgate Tooth Powder and Halo Shampoo, have a double treat. It's Robert Young and Herbert Marshall in one of the best romantic stories of the war, The Enchanted Cottage. So good night and good listening.
The Colgate Tooth Powder and Halo Shampoo Bulletin for the Future. Next week, Charles Vander's production of Theater of Romance brings you The Enchanted Cottage with two of Hollywood's most popular stars, Robert Young and Herbert Marshall. Enchanted Cottage will be followed by James Hilton's magnificent story, Random Harvest, starring one of America's leading actors, Don Ameche. Keep a date with Theater of Romance for all the weeks to come. You'll always hear your favorite stars. These presentations of Theater of Romance come to you because of your enthusiastic recognition of Colgate Tooth Powder for a breath that's sweet.
And Halo Shampoo to glorify your hair.
This is your host, Frank Graham, saying goodnight and wishing you love, happiness, and romance.
Mrs. America, here is a message from Secretary of Agriculture Anderson. He says even though meat rationing has ended, there still remains the need for salvaging all used fats. Yes, ladies, there is still a shortage of fat for industry, and one result of this shortage is a scarcity of soap. If you want to see a plentiful supply of soap in the stores, do save and sell all the fat you possibly can. Just remember, where there's fat, there's soap. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Theater of Romance from February 19, 1946, a brief adaptation of the 1944 film The Uninvited, heard on CBS. And the curtain comes down on this hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.